Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach, consultant, trainer, and author. And this is episode 101, Worldview Alignment for Strategic Growth with Chris Peterson. Marketing Across Divides, How Understanding Liberal and Conservative Belief Systems Unlocks Hidden Customer Alignment and Builds Empathic Influence. What this episode will do for you is explore consumer behavior through their worldview, discovering how liberal and conservative belief systems shape purchasing decisions, brand preferences, and media consumption patterns. Understand why messaging is never neutral by gaining insight into how your company's worldview, often rooted in its founder, can align or conflict with your audience's values. Apply worldview awareness to marketing strategy by learning practical methods for identifying your market's ideological lean and tailoring your messaging, tone, and positioning for better alignment. Learn how to bridge polarization with strategic empathy, seeing how curiosity and research can help business leaders understand both sides of the ideological spectrum, improving both connection and growth. And I would add a side note that there's more than two sides. Activate a new lever for business growth is the other thing it'll do for you. Discovering how belief-driven segmentation can enhance market fit, avoid accidental alienation, and uncover fresh growth opportunities. But before we dive further in, let's take a quick step back. If you're new here, welcome to Thought Leadership Studio. But I created this podcast to empower forward-thinking leaders like you to break free from conventional, outdated marketing traps that treat people as data points rather than the engaged learners they are. Strategic thought leadership shifts the game by focusing on guiding your audience to new ways of thinking that help them extract more value out of your product or service category, make smarter buying decisions, or maybe even attach new higher values to your category while leading them to also revere your or your organization's special, unique benefits or ways of doing things. It's about empowerment, reshaping beliefs, expanding worldviews, and amplifying impact in ways that traditional marketing can't touch. You'll learn to create content that people want to consume and that they keep coming back to you for. So some episodes of this podcast are like workshops to hone your thought leadership skills, and some include interviews of models of excellence, real-world examples of leaders who are either shifting industries, challenging norms, and building true authority, or who maybe offer specialized skills or knowledge relevant to strategic thought leadership. In this episode, I'm joined by Chris Peterson, marketing pioneer, author of Red and Blue Customers, and co-founder of LifeMind, an AI agent platform for regional and national brands. Strategic thought leadership includes applying insight for empowerment-based influence. Peterson models this attribute well by revealing how political worldviews shape customer behavior and how understanding this can become a powerful lever for growth. Drawing from deep research and decades of agency experience, Chris shares how brand messaging, market fit, and belief systems intersect, and how leaders can use worldview awareness to connect across divides without taking sides. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I am your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting across Zoom and the Atlantic Ocean from Chris Peterson in Milan now, who's the co-founder of LifeMind, an AI agent platform designed for national, local, and regional marketers. And with over 30 years as a marketing pioneer and entrepreneur, Chris has founded two digital marketing agencies, launched one of the first digital agencies in the 90s, earned recognition for the Wall Street Journal, which was later acquired. And in 2020, Chris discovered Pew Research highlighting the deep divide in how Democrats and Republicans perceive the world. This insight led him to explore how political beliefs shape consumer behavior and was the genesis for red and blue customers that we'll discuss. Great to have you here, Chris, or have you there.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here.
So maybe to give our listener who may not yet be familiar with your work some context, in particular around red and blue. Was there a pivotal moment of awareness or an event that set you on the path to evolving this work?
Yeah, there was. And, you know, throughout my career in marketing, I mean, I've been mostly focused on being a business person, but the aspect of marketing that I always enjoyed the most was human insight. And it was about understanding why people do what they do. Because in advertising, that's everything.
Sure.
Right. And so I always got along really well with the account planners and the research people and the strategy people. And I I'm a research junkie as a result. Like I read a lot, you know, when Gallup comes out with something, when Pew comes out with something, when I see all kinds of new insights come out, I just love reading it. And you mentioned this Pew Research study in the intro, and that was December 2020. And it was right after Joe Biden got elected president. And the fascinating thing about the Pew study was that it allowed voters for Biden and voters for Trump to basically say in an open-ended way what they wanted the other side to know about them, okay? Ooh. So you don't typically see open-ended questions in studies like this, right? So I read like, I don't know, 100 responses, you know, from both sides. And what struck me was that both sets of people had authentic stories to tell. They were passionate, and they also saw the world quite differently from each other. And after I read so many, I was like, well, if these two groups see the world so differently, how could this not affect what they buy? Okay. And that was the kernel of the idea behind the book, Red and Blue Customers. And so I set out and I asked myself, okay, if this is an interesting idea, then I would first have to find, is there evidence that they buy different things? I'd have to figure out why they buy different things. Like what is it that's shaping their behavior that a business could use? And then what would a roadmap be for applying all this for growth? And it was really an exciting project because, you know, I've spent decades in the business, and it's really hard to come across something new that changes how you think about customers. You know, it's not very typical. So what I found was, as soon as I just started doing online research around, you know, what liberals and conservatives buy, I found an enormous amount of evidence. I mean, anyone could spend 10 or 15 minutes and just, you know, Google the topic and you'll see it. And, you know, it ranges from, you know, Harris does an annual study for brand alignment between the two groups, and they'll rank the top 15 brands for each group, and there's only like two or three that are shared on the chart. And then there are, there's media consumption, there's the products they buy, there's the brands they align with. There was overwhelming evidence. And that just got me started. I was off to the races. And then the next step was to identify, well, what is really shaping the purchase decision? Like what's behind it? Because you see articles today about the differences in what they buy sometimes. The Wall Street Journal ran a piece, I think, 3 or 4 months ago, turned it into kind of a game, like pick which side aligns with which brands, But I wanted to get to why. And so I researched that and I figured, well, if I could come up with, seven or eight values or things that drive these decisions, I might have something. And I ended up finding 27, 20 differences and seven similarities. And it was all based on research. It's all research that comes out of social psychology, social anthropology, and cultural geography. And that really formed the core of it. And like I said, it was very exciting to work on because it all felt so fresh and new and yet so obvious, like it's just right in front of us. And yet, as marketers, we fundamentally don't look at it.
That's fascinating, and for a lot of reasons. So to condense that down to something that can be a little more grounded for the listener who might be wondering, how does this affect me? So what does this mean to me? What would make that actionable for a thought leader, entrepreneur, or business person in thinking about their messaging?
Yeah, so one of the big revelations in the work was that there's no such thing as a neutral message when it comes to this topic, or very little. What happens is in businesses that I study is that almost without fail, a business is a the worldview of the business as more liberal or conservative almost always comes from the founder. Okay. And you can, and even if the founding of the business goes back 30, 40, 50, 60 years, it doesn't matter. There's this like cultural imprint on the business from the founder or the original people as it relates to liberal or conservative. So then the question becomes, how much is that being projected onto the market? Right. And typically it is. I mean, in almost every case, with the businesses that I studied, it ends up getting projected. And then it becomes a question of, does it align with the market that I want to sell to? Because markets, there's no such thing as a neutral market either. Markets tend to skew a little or a lot liberal or a little or a lot conservative. And I don't mean far left, far right. I mean, just, a bit more conservative, a bit more liberal. And so having that awareness of that is huge. And, in working in marketing for so many decades, I mean, we never talked about this. We never had awareness of any of this. And when I really started digging into it, it started to explain, some instances of campaigns that actually, failed,
Imagine.
which was interesting. So I think as an entrepreneur or a thought leader, I think being self-aware of what you believe when it comes to worldview. And I should explain real quick, like I use the term worldview. Worldview is really the starting point. Worldview is liberal or conservative. It's defined roughly, there are some different definitions of it. It's basically what you believe to be true, with an ideology being how you choose to move forward. And politics is just an expression of worldview, okay? Politics doesn't drive these decisions, the purchase decisions. It's the worldview that does. It's the sets of values that people have. So having self-awareness around like your own personal worldview, the folks around you, maybe locally, and then thinking about your market and like who you're talking to in terms of your audience and who your customers are, all of that becomes a source of opportunity for growth. Because if you can line these things up properly or manage them properly, then they become a new lever for all kinds of growth.
That makes sense. And there's a couple pieces of that that offer some roads to go down that I think could be very interesting to the listener. And one of them is just the worldview-based, values-based model of marketing in general, which that's extremely powerful. Now, the theme of this podcast is strategic thought leadership. So it's about challenging paradigms, challenging mental models, but you have to pick your battles. Yeah, if you go after a deeply held belief system, it's going to be a tough road. So you better really have something strong, strong arguments behind it if you want to change minds of people. It's like trying to talk somebody out of cheering for their favorite sports team. They identify with their belief systems. So where does that fit in terms of how do we help shape market perception?
Yeah, so love the question. One of the big revelations in all of this for me, and I have to say, learning all this stuff was kind of funny because I'm like, I look back on the career and I'm like, wow, I wish I'd known this before, but better late than never, right?
Sure.
And one of the big revelations I had was that I had been thinking about marketing wrong. When I looked back on all of my efforts, I've run several agencies, worked with global brands, startups. When we think about customers, we tend to put them under a microscope, okay? We tend to look at them from the outside in, okay? The ultimate metaphor for this, or not even a metaphor, but back in the days when people did focus groups, and not many people do these days, but you look through the one-way mirror at the customers to see what they're doing and the decisions they're making and what marketing directions they like. And I realized that that's not the way to do marketing. You have to turn the table to your points. Like, you've got to like disrupt that paradigm and look through the eyes of the customer at the business. So yes, to your point, the perception of the business, not the perception of the customer. And that became a very powerful way for me to think about audiences. Now, so where does that take you? Okay, so as soon as you do that, you start to realize that your customers are made up of a whole bunch of different groups of people. They have different views, they have different worldviews. So some are gonna be liberal, some are gonna be conservative. There are other dimensions as well, like generation and region and other things like that. But the worldview piece I find to be particularly powerful. And what it forces you to do is learn about both groups in a more proactive way. Like today, we don't have a lot of incentive to learn about the other side, whatever side that is. Doesn't matter if you're liberal or conservative. But if it's for business growth and understanding your customer and meeting goals, well, that's a good reason. And so what ends up happening in these exercises, like when people read the book or read my newsletter, they say that, wow, okay, now I realize that both of these groups are just different ways of seeing the world. The temperature comes down, okay, from studying this topic. And you can approach it in a far more dispassionate way, a more objective way, and say, okay, well, my customers are this or that. And okay, here are some values we can use to shape the marketing. And let's create better fit and test this and see what the results are. So to your point about, how do you get someone to think differently if they're maybe entrenched with their own worldview, right? Well, I think I'm very optimistic that if people take the trouble to actually look at both sides as customers, as markets, you can't help but have that affect you personally, as it did myself and as I've heard from readers, that it actually helps kind of understanding everyone in general.
How does this play into how you represent your product or service or look to persuade an audience to embrace your messaging around it?
Well, what it involves is basically a couple of steps. The first step is pretty simple. It's to look at who your customers are. Are they more liberal or conservative? Most people don't look at this, right? I never did, you know, for decades. And I think people will be surprised that how strong the skews can be. We've looked at some companies where the skews were very small. Like we looked at some data from a footwear company where it skewed slightly conservative. Right now we're working with two companies. One skews very liberal, one skews very conservative. But again, I don't mean far left, far right. I mean, there's just a strong majority of customers are liberal or conservative, right? So that's the first step. You have to understand who your customers are. You've then got to look at the market and see, is that more liberal or conservative? Your customers are probably a reflection of that market, okay? Not always, because there might be a disconnect. But then it's like, okay, if I'm going to create stronger fit between my business, my products, and my customer, I need to now shape my marketing in a way that they see my product fitting into their lives better, okay? And that's the part of looking through the eyes of the customer at my business. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to force fit something on them. I'm going to look at the different types of values that my customers hold. And then I'm going to look at how can I shape my marketing to do that. So some examples of these values. I mean, it has nothing to do with politics, right? It just has to do with belief systems that are hard to judge as right or wrong, quite honestly, when you get down to kind of the core belief system. So it might be perceptions of the future. This is kind of an easy one. You know, liberal customers generally want to, and this is all based on research, liberal customers generally want, you know, they see problems with the present, they want to fix it and create a better future. Conservative customers generally are more content with the present, and therefore the future is more known to them. They would just assume the present stay as it is. And that has, that just that one set of values has dramatic effect on how you might promote, let's say, a brand new innovative product that, you know, is a little bit disruptive. In that case, you want to invoke, you probably want to target liberal customers first, because they're going to be the early adopters. They're going to be the ones experimenting with new products. And then you want to shape the product as innovative, new, breakthrough. You might even, you know, shape it as, you know, something that comes from the future, if you really want it to be more extreme. There are all kinds of other things you can do too, like with other values, which I can get into later, like self-expression and who your spokespeople are, because even those categorize differently in the two groups. And then, you know, on the conservative side, you might frame the product more as it's more reliable, it's established. There are people like you who use it. It's something that you should feel comfortable with. And those are two very different ways to possibly frame up the same product. Now, with innovative products, you want to sequence it. You want to start with more liberal customers. And it's not hard to find them, because the geography today has made the targeting of these two groups quite easy. You know, it's liberals tend to be more urban, higher population density environments, and conservatives tend to be in less, you know, lower population density environments. You know, the suburbs is where it gets, you know, a little trickier, but you can still identify the targeting. And then with conservative customers, you know, they can come later. Like when you have success with a liberal audience, you can transition to a conservative audience, because they will see the proof. They will see that the product is actually pretty good. It survived the experimentation by the liberal customers, and they will adopt it. You know, and it's not that they don't want innovative products. It's just that they kind of want to see some proof. Now, a lot of this can sound like overstatement, right? You can always find exceptions to this, but these are trends in markets that I think marketers can take advantage of.
That makes sense. And the way I see it is that when someone adopts a left or a right paradigm, it's almost as if a lot of their thinking is pre-made for them. You're expected to assume all of these assumptions. And I think back to some of my mentors who promoted things like maybe thinking rather than Aristotelian either or logic. Something can be somewhere in the middle. Like I believe in UFOs, or I believe UFOs don't exist. It's very different from saying, well, I give them about a 70% chance of being something we don't understand and a 20% chance of being alien, for example. And which is part of what I like to teach in terms of strategic thought leadership is being a little more flexible with your own belief systems as a way to also make other belief systems in your marketplace more clear, which opens up opportunities because you can then sense an unmet value in your audience that could be satisfied by a fresh mental model that respectfully challenges a mental model that they hold about your category and maybe just how to use it or where it fits into their life, not something, you know, so deep as challenging really deeply held beliefs they'd identify with, but just how we see how to use this product or service.
Yeah.
So given that, what can we do? And you spoke a little bit about this earlier, which I really like. What can we do to gain more empathy for those who believe things that we don't through this kind of research and understanding and awareness?
Well, so there a couple of things jumped out at me as I was researching this, and none of this I expected. One of the things that jumped out was when you look at these two groups as markets. You know, I asked myself, well, is one market better than the other? Right? And so I quickly found that liberal customers have 20% higher income. But then I found that conservative customers have far lower cost of living, higher rate of homes paid off, lower cost of food. And when you net all of those things out economically, they're identical in spending power. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So when you just and then you consider the fact that the country split in half, like literally, like the middle is, you know, almost non-existent. There are certainly a lot of moderates. Like I don't want to say that everyone's perfectly liberal and everyone's perfectly conservative. The strong majority of customers are moderate, but they're moderate in being liberal or conservative. Okay. And so when you think about it being split down the middle, equal spending power. You know, I think it helps communicate opportunity for a business if they choose to think that way. And in the company engagements that we've had so far, it's been kind of surprisingly good that people don't get too worked up about it. Like when my business partner and I first started the business, we were like, oh my God, should we even say liberal or conservative? Should we give it like code names? Like, are people just going to shut this down because it feels like politics? And we've actually found that not to be true. People are genuinely curious about the topic. Mm-hmm. And that curiosity tends to lead toward learning about not only, you know, you learn not only about the other side, whatever side that is, you also learn about yourself, and that becomes fascinating, you know. And I think it certainly for me personally, it became transformative as I worked on the book. You know, it's like, you know, my own temperature just kind of came way down. And then I thought, well, not everyone can write a book on this. You know, I can't expect everyone to have the same reaction. But readers have said this to me. They're like, yeah, you know, I kind of get it now. The world is pluralistic. There's different groups. And then the other thing that jumps out, this will be the last point on this question, which is if you think, and this is one of my favorites, but if you think that your side, whatever side that is so obviously the better side, okay, then why isn't it more than half? Okay, no one ever asked this question. I went around asking this question to a lot of people. It's like, well, whether you're conservative or liberal, you know, why isn't it more than half? Because they're basically 50-50. And I think that helps, you know, when people realize that, they go, you know, yeah, I Yeah, I've never thought about it that way. And I remember talking to some people early on and about this, and I was sizing the markets and looking at spending power and looking at Pew Research. And people were saying, no, there's more of us, whichever us was. And I was like, no, actually, pretty much 50-50. So that's another interesting twist to this. It kind of makes you stop and think. And I think that helps open up maybe an ability. To your point about, thinking about a different mental model that someone could possibly have that drives purchase decisions of your product. And I think to me that's fascinating, but I'm a research junkie, so maybe I'm into it more than others.
So yeah, that is very fascinating to me as well. And I remember reading a book that had to do with learning to see the world through different eyes to expand your worldview and to gain more insight and have a little more freedom from being constrained by belief systems you may not have adopted consciously. And one of the activities it recommended was whatever point of view you disagree with the most, read some literature from that point of view. And just for a minute, you don't have to believe it. You don't have to adopt it. You don't have to even like it. But just for a minute, imagine seeing the world through those eyes.
That is fantastic.
It brings in so much more information. Just like what you mentioned earlier, is how many organizations have a top-down model of marketing where they see a customer's data points rather than going, as you mentioned, seeing your company through the customer's eyes. And was it Drucker that said marketing is not a division, it's how your company looks from the outside or how your product or service looks from the outside?
Interesting.
And
Yeah, I have not heard that particular angle from him. That's very, I love that. I'll steal that from
Please, and I stole it from somewhere.
you.
I have a friend and associate who's brilliant at service business consulting, who does redesigns for business from the customer's point of view, and it flushes out a tremendous amount of waste because what people forget is that the customer sets the value.
That's right.
And so, if we
That's
don't
right.
design from the customer's point of view, we're creating waste.
Yeah.
And that's why traditional budgeting usually drives cost up because it's not done from the customer's point of view.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I, one of the most interesting experiences for me over the last year and a half as I've worked on, the startup Lifemine, is looking at creative content that is infused with different sets of values. And I have writing in my background. I love writing. I just enjoy it. And I read some of this content and I look at it and I go, I never would have written that, but that's the point, right? It's like that is being written for somebody different from me, and that is being written for someone who's buying a product that maybe I don't own, right? And that just becomes transformative in terms of how communication gets done. Because when you think about traditional communications, it's like, you have the brief, you define the audience in often somewhat simplistic terms, and then we sit around and we don't sit around. Teams will possibly create some advertising. You look at different directions. You want to choose something for a campaign, and you look at it. And you want to pick something that you feel is the best, piece of advertising. But how often are you doing that, keeping in mind what the customer sees? Hard to do, right? I mean, it's kind of a mental challenge to actually do that. But I felt like I spent decades people putting work in front of me saying, okay, here are the different options. What should we do? And it was my own worldview that's imprinting the decisions that I make. And I look back on that, I'm like, well, okay, some of that probably worked and some didn't. So it's a fascinating mental exercise to go through this in order to create stronger product market fit. And I like the way you framed it up as, adopting a different mental model, and also the Drucker quote about you know, looking at the business from the outside, I think that's spot on.
Well, what can we do as entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, founders, C-suite decision makers, marketers, to better get out of our own set of mental models that includes values, because the value is a mental model about what's important, and dissociate from it enough to more clearly understand those of our market segment or audience?
Yeah, so I couple answers to that. I think one is you go on a road trip. You know, I mean, like, you know, if you live in any somewhat densely populated area, you know, drive 2 hours outside, right? And you'll probably feel like you're on a different planet.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel like you're on a different planet? Well, it's because they're driving different cars, there's different restaurants, they're wearing different clothes, the houses look different. These are all things people buy. So you have to ask yourself, is my perception of what those things should be right or wrong, right? Like we tend to believe that our decisions are the right decisions, you know? But oh yeah, you don't have to drive very far to find people who make a totally different set of decisions.
Yes.
And then it's like, okay, can you experience that in a non-judgmental way? And that's the key part of this, like for worldview, conservative and liberal, is to just get rid of the judgment, right? And that's hard for some people, right? And I get that for some people, that's going to be really hard. But I think if the motivation is to drive business growth, understand customers better,
mm-hmm.
and create more effective marketing, I think you know, people gravitate toward it then. You know, it's a great incentive for actually people learning about each other, because they're you know, the geographic separation of liberals and conservatives is pretty extreme. It's been measured any one of a number of different ways. So our ability to interact is really limited. And I think those types of things can help. I think, you know, I think fundamentally what it's going to take also is to adopt a philosophy somewhat that says the world is pluralistic. And it's not about what I believe is right and everyone else believes is wrong. If you see the world as pluralistic, made up of different value groups, as you've described, mm-hmm. then you start to remove the judgment, not only of the people you see, but also as markets, you know, and your ability to work with this in business. And pluralism becomes a very powerful way to think about markets, different value groups, pluralistic country, because this concept of liberal and conservative customers, it's a global phenomenon as well. It's not just the US. My work is focused primarily on the US because of all the data I was able to get, but it's global as well.
That reminds me a little bit about Francis Bacon's model of idols of the tribe, which is, if I recall correctly, the misunderstanding that we are interacting directly with reality, where in fact we're interacting directly with our maps of reality, our mental models, and the idols of the cave, which pointed out that even if you understand that we're operating on maps of reality, you might not yet understand that everybody has their own separate and distinct map that they're navigating with, their own set of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're trying to persuade, it's not, well, you're wrong and I'm right. It's, you're right from your perspective.
Exactly.
But maybe there's another perspective if you want to join me in looking at it from this particular worldview. And you also maybe remember that how much I used to like to fly to Manhattan, because it was the closest culture shift from Charleston, South Carolina, you could get from a 2-hour plane ride. It's very laid back and relaxed here, not so much in Manhattan.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The pace is fast. This has been fascinating, Chris. And I really like your first name, by the way, too. I think it's one of the best. We usually wind these interviews up in a couple of ways. I'll open those doors for you, if you don't mind. Two kinds of questions. The first is, What would you recommend that the listener do on their own behalf to utilize some of these things we've talked about or other aspects of your knowledge that could help someone looking to be better at online influence that they could do right away? Top three things. And
yeah.
If someone's listening to this, you want to get your book or they want to follow your work, how would they find you online?
Okay, yeah. So I think that, you know, the first step in this journey is to, you know, I mentioned it before, just figure out your customers. Are they more liberal or conservative? Because honestly, that just opens up the entire dialogue of everything you can possibly do. Now, you can do that a number of different ways. It's actually not that hard. A lot of customer database software allows you to just run a report on it. You know, not in every case, but sometimes you just push a button if you just ask the question. The funny thing is very few people ask the question. And, or you could look at urbanicity, like you could look at, do my customers live in more densely populated areas or not? You could also just send your customers a simple survey, and a one question survey, or it could be part of a larger, you know, research effort where you just ask them, you know, in a non-confrontational way, you say, you know, you have them answer the question, I am, and there's four choices, liberal or somewhat liberal, conservative or somewhat conservative, you know, so it gives people an option to kind of not badge themselves one way or the other. And in an instant, you'll find out like who your customers are. And, you know, and then, you know, then it just becomes a question of strategy, right? It just becomes like, okay, who is my market? What do they think? You know, the book has all the values. It's all based on research. You know, if someone wants to do it, I also, I write a newsletter called Red Moon Customers, same title as the book. And honestly, a lot of the values are in articles on the newsletter. It's free. You can just go there. And there's probably, I think more than half of them are actually written up in the newsletter. The book goes into a lot more depth. It gets into like the history of polarization, which I found fascinating. It gets into pretty detailed profiles of the 28 different values, you know, seven of which, by the way, are shared values. And then it gets into a roadmap. And that first step in the roadmap is to know if your customers are liberal or conservative. It then goes on to, you know, okay, now pick the values most appropriate for your business that feel right. And then, you know, and then it's optimizing, you know, your business. You can do this, you know, with your own research if you want to take the time. The book makes it pretty handy. The newsletter is also there as well. The company lifemind.ai, we're automating the process of understanding customers and bringing the values to life through creative content across all media channels together with targeting, which has been super interesting and fun. And yeah, so that's, you know, lifemind.ai is where I am. And you can learn more about the book there. It's sold on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Anyone should feel free to reach out with any questions, or if they have a situation and or question about it as it relates to this topic, I'd be happy to respond.
Fantastic. And to the listener, I will link to these resources on the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com, which is linked in the episode description if you are listening to this on an app. It's been a pleasure, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for tuning in to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach, consultant, creator of The Thought Process, and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. And this has been episode 101, Worldview as a Growth Strategy with Chris Peterson, how understanding belief systems unlocks marketing alignment and empathic influence. where we explored how liberal and conservative worldviews shape consumer behavior, the origin story behind red and blue customers, and why worldview matters for marketers, the 27 differences and 7 similarities that drive belief-based purchasing decisions, why brand messaging is rarely neutral and how to align it with your audience, and how understanding both sides when you slice the cookie that way can foster not just better marketing, but deeper empathy and more authentic leadership. If you'd like to dive deeper into the ideas we covered today, and you're listening on a podcast app, head over to the episode page at thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the description. You'll find a curated transcript, links to Chris's work, and distilled takeaways to help you apply these concepts in your business or brand. And I have a special for listeners of a free new ebook to help you leverage the strategic use of what's called structured schema combined with strategic thought leadership to get artificial intelligence recommending you. It's called Get AI Marketing for Us. You can download it now at aimarketing4.us, which is also linked in the episode description. And if this episode sparked new insight, please share it with someone who will benefit, maybe a fellow entrepreneur, marketer, or emerging thought leader in your circle. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review to help bring more transformative conversations like this your way. Until next time, thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm Chris McNeil.
Thought Leadership Studio.